This is Rocky Flats from Greenlight Radio 97.1 in Boulder, Colorado, and I have on the phone with us Mr. Immortal Technique, also just known as Tech. How you doing, Tech?
What's up, Pirate Radio? What's up, brother? What's up, Colorado? What's up, Southwest? I'm here, and let's talk.
All right. First off, let's talk the Middle Passage. You're releasing the Middle Passage. Is there a set release date? I could not find one yet.
No. It's about halfway done. Right now, I'm doing some post-production work with about half the tracks, and then I'm in the middle of some production work with the other half of them. So far, in terms of production, I got, of course, Al Paul, who was with me from the very beginning. I got DJ Premier, DJ Green Lantern, Ali Shahid Muhammad, Graham Jones, hopefully Static Selector, Needles. So a whole slew of very talented producers have come on board to help me complete the vision of the Middle Passage.
Nice. Now that's been in production since 2010, is that right?
Yeah, there was a few setbacks, like in terms of what I wanted to get done at the time, but I'm glad to say that the majority of those are out of the way. You know, I had to get new distribution. I signed a couple of new acts that I'm going to bring on the road with me. As a matter of fact, some of them will be with me when I finally touch down in Grand Junction. So, you know, I'm just trying to expand Viper Records and also expand kind of what I do in terms of the platform of hip-hop to activism and human rights and stuff like that.
For sure. Now... You released The Martyr, though, as a single, correct?
Yeah, I released the Martyr record. I just pretty much gave away. We're still giving it away free on ViperRecords.com. And when I mean free, when I say free, I don't mean like you have to put your email address or you don't have to sit through a 30-second Vivo commercial. You just press one button. And then, you know, 7 minutes later, you got a 16-song album by Immortal Technique. There you go. And The Martyr, of course, features Joel Ortiz, Brother Ali, Chuck D, Styles P, Vinny Paz, just a slew of very, very prominent MCs. Of course, Akir, Diabolik, Slave Sever, Poison Pen, all the people that you are used to seeing me around.
For sure. Now, have you worked with Brother Ali in the past? I wasn't even aware if you had or not.
Yeah, actually, he was one of the first. I think it was like the first, second tour I think I ever had had out there. I actually went with him and I think two other people, and we basically went up and down the West Coast doing shows. So, I mean, for me, it's a blessing to be able to do anything, but then to reconnect and with one of your old buddies from way back in the day that you kind of started out with, you know, it's definitely... I feel that I've come full circle, and I'm a lot farther along in the game, obviously, than I used to be when I first started touring this tour with him, like, I don't know, I think like 8 or 9 years ago.
Right. Now, speaking of that, this tour coming up, you and Brother Lee, the War and Peace Tour, correct?
Yes, sir, warandpeacetour.com. For anybody out there who wants to know.
Which one's which?
we had that argument a lot, you know. We said, yo, because I told him at first, I said, look, everyone's going to brand me War, everyone's going to brand you Peace. And he was like, well, the thing about the beauty about what we do is that some of my songs do sound like War, and then some of them really do have a more introspective vibe to them. And none of the things that I've done, or none of the things that he's done, even if they've been violent or they've been gory, it's never gratuitous violence, you know what I mean,
brother?
It's never like we're just shooting people for no reason or spending money for no reason. I would tell people, flossing is not the problem. Like, to me, it's not about people who have money and spend it. If you're spending it on ridiculous things, that's your prerogative. You can do it, but then you don't have the right to complain to people when you've blown everything you have and you have nothing to show for it and you don't have any investments later on in life. You know, making money is not the same thing as keeping money and having money. So I think that for me, I've always been an individual who invested wisely and kind of distinguished himself in a way apart from other MCs as to my independence, which leads to the ability for me to generate more funds, to have the ability to say whatever I want to say, and to be as, you know, wild and crazy, or to be as truthful and as righteous as I want to be in any type of music, you know?
Right, right. Which brings me to an odd thing I found out. You are on Yoko Ono's Meltdown Tour, is that correct?
I did one of the festival days. Yeah, I was on one of the festival days in London, which was really cool. I got to practically, I think we sold out the Royal Festival Hall, so it was jam-packed with people, and I had a great time. It was a little bit of a weird setup because it's like an opera house over there. So the opera house is a little bit of a, you know, a little bit of a different setup, but I had a great time.
Sure. Now, what other projects and future releases, you know, aside from, you know, The Middle Passage, what other things you got going on that we should be excited about, music or otherwise?
Well, I had this DVD, The Revolution of Immortal Technique, directed by my friend Kerry Stewart. It's on ViperRecords.com now. It features people like Ice-T, Woody Harrelson, Cornel West, like I said, Chuck D, KRS-One, and a slew of other people that you, like I said, people that you always used to see me around on the DVD too. And it's a story about my personal life, but also very much a commentary on artistic freedom. I also want to expand the Green Light Project. If people remember the album I had called The Third World, it was pretty big in the independent world. Well, we used a percentage of those proceeds to open an orphanage in a school in Afghanistan. And now, even though we're going to do another fundraiser for that to keep the school going, because now we have about 20 people, but a good portion of them, we started this in 2008, 2009.
I actually had a question about that at one point.
Right, some of these kids, now they're ready to leave. They came into place at 14, and now they found an apprenticeship at 18, so they're about to leave, and it's a big commemoration. So I'm going to try and go back there at the end of the year or early next year. And that's something I'm really looking forward to, expanding that program and then also expanding the Green Light Project in that respect and being able to bring those resources and what we were able to do for orphans and the children of Afghanistan to another place. You know what I mean? I want to be able to create that in several different locations and to work with people who are interested in activism and human rights and really care and are willing to put themselves on the line to do that. You know, I don't respect people that are apathetic. I don't respect people who say, oh, that's not my problem. Oh, it's always been that way. I respect people who say that's wrong and I'm going to change it. I respect people who say, you know what, I don't agree with that. And if that person is not free, then I don't feel free. You know what I mean? That's how I feel. And that extends itself to all matters of politics, you know, whether we're talking race, class, or even gender, the one that gets left out of line in hip-hop, you know?
Well, that brings me more to my, some more political questions I had for you, you know, and that answer is one of them, which was, how is the orphanage doing? It sounds like it's doing well then.
Right. Yeah, no, definitely. I mean, there's always going to be some sort of difficulty. There's always going to be, you know, trials and tribulations, but, you know, it's a blessing to be working with very competent people. It's a blessing to be working with fellow humanitarians. It's a blessing to be working with people that know what they're doing and that have a personal stake in it. You know, they feel like like those kids are like their kids. So that feels great. And I think that over the course of these years, I've seen it develop. I've seen more children come in. You know, we've been able to do some more fundraising activities to keep things going there. So I can't do anything but sing the praises of Omaid International and say that, you know, I really feel like the people of Afghanistan took me in and were very, very kind and very informative and really gave me a lot of information for me to digest about what daily life is like outside of the empire, you know?
For sure, for sure. Now, which brings me to let's jump to a different part of the globe happening right now. Unfortunately distracted by our media, but what are your thoughts on what's going on in Syria right now? What are your thoughts on what's happening there, and what are your thoughts on American media's interpretation to its people?
Look, Syria is not a very easy thing for anybody to figure out. You know, even people who have been studying the region for years are very torn about what the actual solution is. But for people that don't know and just want to refresh, of course, the government of Assad has been a client state of Russia for decades. They basically kept them in power and assisted them with staying in power. Even when other regimes around them were splintering and falling apart, it was very important to the Russians that Syria stay where it is. Now, because of his consolidation of power, Assad was not obviously the ruthless dictator that his father was, but he definitely was a dictator. He wasn't a good person. It wasn't like he was a model citizen for any regime to follow. But then again, it's difficult for me to use these criticisms being a citizen of the United States and say, hey, we act like a rogue state all the time. We don't obey the rules, and we don't want to. We knew that Saddam Hussein was using gas against his people, and we still sold him the components. We still gave him the locations of the Iranian troops at the time. So I think that is difficult for anyone in this country to level accusations like that. But at the same time, we're going to call a spade a spade. The people who were formed against him at first were a lot of very, you know, disheartened and oppressed people who felt like they had been really trounced upon and had their civil rights and pretty much all their rights taken away from them by that regime. So a large percentage of disaffected people broke off and began to have protests and more protests. And as a response to violence against those protests, they attacked the government back with violence. And even though I've talked to people from the opposition, even though they know that with America's help and with Britain's help, with France's help, with the help of Qatar and Saudi Arabia, who have now been people that have been aiding the rebels, even though they know that those people don't have the best interest in heart for Syria, they're willing to make that deal. And I've talked to them, and they say, hey, listen, I know I'm making a deal with the devil, right? Because I step into every conversation with the idea that I may be incorrect. So when I talk to people, I want to learn. When I meet people that say I have the right answer and there's nothing I can do to be wrong, then I automatically think this person is a fool. But when I sit here and I analyze it with people that have actually been through that struggle, and they say, yes, you know what I mean? We know we're making a deal, so to speak, with the devil in handing some of the responsibility of these airstrikes or whatever's going to transpire against the Assad regime, because whatever we try to usher in as a government, as the Syrian people, the individuals who helped you get Assad out of power, they're going to want a slice. And if they don't get their slice, then they're going to kick whoever the fuck you have out of power. I mean, you'll find similar examples of things in other places that are just alike. And I think, you know, people have been kicking around, oh, you know, Syria is not Iraq. We're not going to send ground troops there. That's fine. You know, we've said that before. We said we were just going to do aerial bombardments. But the problem is, then, what is the Russian response going to be? If your purpose is not to cripple and to have regime change, as the Obama administration claims, they claim, we don't want regime change. These strikes aren't for the purpose of regime change. These strikes are for the purpose of punishing Assad for using chemical weapons. And they claim that they're only going to be used against military targets, right? Which is the same thing that they said when they were going to bomb Kosovo. But the reality is that, you know, I ran into a guy from Serbia yesterday, and irrespective of what you think of that war, you know, he told me, hey, man, during those strikes when people were supposedly hitting military installations, somebody blew up my grandmother's house and killed a bunch of people. And, you know, these smart bombs aren't as smart as you think they are, and war is not perfect. And I remind you that if people that you think are innocent died because of a dictator and a war that was perpetrated by, at first, a disaffected group of people, and then a series of jihadists that joined them, some of these people that are making jihad in Syria on the side of the rebels, some of them are doing it because they just believe it's their religious duty, but a large percentage of them are being paid to do what they're doing. So this designates them as not just jihadists, but also as mercenaries. And this government doesn't seem to be concerned with that. We just spent the past 10 years fighting Al Qaeda in, you know, Iraq, supposedly, and then in Afghanistan, which is where they actually had a presence. And now you're going to give weapons and you're aiding a side that has splinter cells of actual Al Qaeda in it, which is the strange, you know, relationship that we now have with that country. And I know it's not easy, and I wish I had solutions to tell people that that could exact and change the course of the amount of carnage that's going to be there. But honestly, I really do see both people's sides in it. You know, I see the fact that they are so fed up and so downtrodden because they have a dictator that they wanted to get rid of. There was not an elected official who's never, you know, really been someone who's been accountable to the disaffected group of people that he rules. And then also you have the other side, which says, okay, we've been down this road before. You know, we've seen this in so many other countries. You come in talking about how you're going to help us and you're going to get rid of our enemy, but then you become our enemy. You install some dictatorial regime that you want to be there so they can ensure that you get the resources for the price that you want them for. I mean, if the interim government in Iraq said, hey, a barrel of oil is going to cost you double what it did before, we'd overthrow that government right afterwards. I mean, that's the whole point of what we go to war for, I think. People don't realize. It's not just to secure America's borders. It's not just the mythology that we're making America safe by taking from other people. They're ashamed to say what they really want. They're ashamed to say we want access to natural resources at certain low prices. We want the ability for our companies to hire people there and not have to give them health services. That's what you want. Why are you fucking ashamed to say that? You're a capitalist country. Just fucking be yourself, dude. It's the same reason that these apologists for slavery and these far-right lunatics are out there propagating lies about how America first started. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. If, for example, I'll tell you, when Europeans first came to this country, right, to this land, they were in these little European colonies, whether they were Dutch or British, and supposedly these settlers and European immigrants or illegal immigrants, because they were the first illegal immigrants here, they said, we came here looking for religious freedom. We came here looking for a place away from disease. Okay. But let's talk about the other reason that you came here, that you leave out of the little Thanksgiving cookie-cutter history books. You came here looking for gold, okay? You came here looking for slaves. You came here looking for women that you could steal. If you're such a capitalist society and you're unabashedly proud of being that, then why aren't you proud of the history of your capitalist society? You want to whitewash it. You want to change it. You want to make it be something different than it was. Maybe because you don't feel, maybe because you say, oh, I feel guilty and I don't want to feel guilty. Well, then suck it up and live with it. Maybe you feel like someone's going to have retribution towards you if you admit that you did all these things wrong. That's fine. Live with the consequences of your actions. You always ask Americans to do that every single day. And we are constantly held to a different standard, obviously, than government is, when government should be held to the same standards of accountability for breaking the law, for killing people, and for stealing money as anybody else should. It's just a shame that they've packaged themselves as a corporation, and therefore they think that they're above the law.
Right. Yeah, I think it's, you know, it seems like, especially with communications and media and everything like that, it seems that societal control through media and communications seems to be a way to divert revolution. And that's my take on it. If you're able to control the minds of people. So I think that's why, I mean, their intent will never be good. It's always, how can they be good at being bad? You know, I think that's what it comes down to.
For me, I think I accuse this government of being guilty of one of the greatest crimes, which is misanthropy, which is a very, very, focused and honest distrust of the human race. I don't think they trust us to rule ourselves. I think they think, hey, these people are talking monkeys, which kind of we are. You know what I mean? I mean, think about
so
it.
So are they.
All shave every ounce of our body, we would all end up looking like, you know, some cave people. Imagine if we never cut our hair, never cut our fingernails, toenails, shaved any part of our body. Ladies, no string. You know what I mean? No waxing.
I've been to festivals, I know.
No, well, You know, how about this? No fancy clothes.
There you go.
You know what I mean? No grooming whatsoever. No brushing your teeth. How about that one? You know, for 30 years, what's going to separate you from that caveman you see in some museum? The problem is that this country or this government is like every other government, and they don't believe that human beings can exist with one another without having the state as, you know, in other words, their God. The state exists to designate what laws they should have, how they should rule, and basically exists like a higher entity above them, controlling them, manufacturing what they do, being able to be in charge of their livelihoods, and then, of course, reaping a profit from every single waking moment of their lives.
Sure, sure. But now, when it comes to the manipulation of the media and stuff, sort of moving into that topic, do you think there's an answer to the manipulative power of major media networks? Do you think there's a way out at this point, or a way for people to really seek truth other than having to dig through a thousand lies on the internet?
Well, I think, look, the expanse of independent media is huge right now. You know, even the fact that I'm on pirate radio is an indication of that. You know, people are bored with hearing the same lie over and over. You know what I mean? In Rome, they used to have a newsreader, and it said that at the beginning of the conflicts between, for example, the Senate and between Octavius Caesar, everyone used to listen to the newsreader. But by the time they got to the triflings of other emperors, years later, people were like, look, the newsreader just reads whatever the government tells them to read. I can't even believe that anymore. I think that's how a lot of people feel in terms of a really, it's not even healthy cynicism, because the government's unhealthy for us. So it's a toxic level of cynicism that exists now with people when they watch the news. They know the coded language. You know, if you tell me that there was a helicopter crash for the 17th time in Afghanistan, it's not because they all had engine failure. It's because somebody shot them out of the sky.
Right.
You know what I mean? When you talk about there are 5,000 casualties in Iraq almost, Jesus Christ, do you know what that means? That means that someone alive right now is practically brain dead or maimed in such a way that their life is incredibly difficult. And God bless those people, because they answered the call when a lot of these cowards that are screaming for war stayed at home and ducked out of Vietnam. God bless anybody who's really out there suffering because of any of these injuries. But if you think about it, the fact that we have medicine the way we do now, if we didn't, we'd have the type of issues that we had with Vietnam in terms of bringing hundreds of people a week home in a casket. And eventually, the media does want to control and want to eliminate what we see of that. Now, the question of why, I leave to you and your listeners. On one hand, they could be saying, if they get so, you know, upset and angry because they see the real face of war, they see the innocent civilian casualties that happen in every war, they have to see us pick a baby up and half of its insides are going to fall out of it and its skin looks like rubber, you know what I mean? That bothers people. That might infuriate people enough to say, no, we're not going to allow this anymore, similar to the way that they lost the bid to go to war in Syria in the UK, in England. They were like, no, we're not doing this. I'm sorry, you've gotten us into two or three of America's wars. We're not going to go to another one. The other thing to consider is that they might be thinking that if they show us, in terms of the media and mainstream media, if they show us these images, if they constantly show us images of death and murder and destruction, what's to say that we won't become desensitized to it, and so desensitized that we consider what our government does to us and then take those type of violent actions, not against another people, but against the government that's oppressing us? So pick your poison, because I'm pretty sure that they are preparing for both of those contingency plans. But in my heart, I honestly believe that that's at least two of the options of the way they look at telling us the truth. How much truth can the American people take? Well, why would you want to give them any truth? Who the fuck ever went broke underestimating the ignorance of the American public? Nobody, you know? So I think their purpose is to try and distract and to placate and to pacify, because they don't make anything and they don't do anything positive for themselves in terms of making money, because that's the only positive thing they see. And having order i.e. everyone just following what they say, they're not accomplishing that by making the population smarter. All right, they're not accomplishing that by making the population critically think. They're accomplishing that by dumbing it down, by making people, you know, more apathetic, less resources available in terms of libraries to actually research what happened in the region all these times when people claim that, you know, oh, they're just terrorists. Well, they've been terrorists for us before, so what does that say about us?
Good point.
I don't know. It's not going to be an easy road to anywhere that we're going, but I think that as long as there's more independent media like this show, like other shows, you know, I've been interviewed by a million different websites all the time when I'm on tour. Some of them are very big websites, and some of them are very small. And even though they might be a quote-unquote small website, they still reach hundreds of thousands of people. I think those forms of media are incredibly important. I think independent media is going to be the answer to people in the future, because they're leaving in droves, you know? They're leaving in droves away from the status quo and from mainstream media now.
That's like one of my favorite pirates once said, I wanted to become a pirate because I wanted to see how much I could do when I stopped watching television. Well, I wanted to thank you for taking the time to talk to me, Tech. It's been a long time coming. We've definitely been fans of yours since our creation, oh, hell, 5 years ago. So, thank you.
Well, I appreciate that very much, man. Thank you, sir. Thank you very much to everybody working behind the boards and doing anything to promote this station or whatever you're doing. I know you're the unsung heroes of the fight, and I appreciate you and the people that are listening out there on Pirate Radio. Remember, it's not important that you believe everything that I say. It's important that you question everything that you are told. Immortal Technique, Viper Records, at Immortal Tech, and then on Instagram and Facebook, /TechImmortal, holler at me. I see you, Grand Junction, Immortal Technique, Brother Ali, Ourself, Divine, Diabolic, DJ, G.I. Joe. It's going down. Remember, ladies and gentlemen, you're not playing. This is real, unscripted, non-reality show hip-hop, okay? I have to say that again. This is non-reality show hip-hop. We are not here to try and play games with you. I'm going to see y'all very soon. I love y'all. September 18th, Gothic Theater, Denver, Colorado. Peace.